Coming up next on Tech News Today, Evernote decides to not read all of your notes in the name of machine learning. The long-term risks of quantified self data created by wearables. Vine is apparently sticking around in the form of a six-second video camera app. What it's like to experience the biggest tech marketplace in Shenzhen, China. And a digital assistant in a jar that could also be your lifetime companion. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1663, recorded Friday, December 16th, 2016.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/TNT.
And by Grasshopper. Stay connected and run your business from your mobile phone with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, visit trygrasshopper.com/twit.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about everything you need to know about technology. And we do it with love. Mm-hmm. I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. Is this how you do the love thing?
Yeah, I think so.
And then you go like, or whatever.
Yeah,
something like
you
that.
You could do that. I was going to say that we're the Mario and blank, but I know
the Mario and the Run.
The Run, yeah. Sure. I know so little about Nintendo and Mario Brothers that I couldn't even think of another character.
Oh, Zelda. Sure. We're the Mario and the Zelda.
Who are the ones that have the red mushrooms hats?
Oh. You? Oh. I should know this. I should know this. Dang it.
Mushies. They're the mushies.
Okay,
yeah,
that works.
Let's call them the mushies.
Go with that one. Sure. Evernote came under fire earlier this week when it was announced that they had an upcoming change to their privacy policy that would open users' notes up to being read by Evernote employees, all in an effort to improve its machine learning capabilities because, you know, everybody's getting in on this machine learning thing. Then Evernote users lost their flippin' mind, particularly because there was no way to opt out of this impending snooping. Evernote brass apparently has listened to the mountain of complaints and have now announced that the updated privacy policy will be delayed as they rework it so that users can choose to opt in, which it's kind of strange to... I mean, I guess on it, from a business sense, it makes sense to want everything to be included on this because the more data that's used to kind of teach, you know, machine learning systems, the better it's going to be at understanding kind of what users are doing. But I find it strange for a service, especially a service like Evernote, where, I mean, people, it's a note app and people are logging everything about themselves. It's so incredibly personal. The kind of information is there. And the initial post was like, basically, well, you have no choice. Our employees are going to read your notes. I mean, and it was slightly less like as direct as that, but it was pretty direct. It's like, why not give an opt-in sort of method and not make it just so confrontational almost?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is such, it's like a little morality play that we've seen play out so often with companies where it's like they change the privacy policy, which they've been doing, but now we're at an age where like there are people that make it their job to read policy privacy policies.
Good.
And then, you know, and promote the fact that, you know, something has changed. Mm-hmm. And everyone needs to know about it. So, you know, none of us read that before we updated, except for, you know, some people were like, hey, this is bad. Let's all take a look at that. And we all see it. And then the company comes back and says, oh, you're misunderstanding. You're overreacting. It is not as bad as it seems. And then, you know, we say, yes, it is. You said that humans would have access to our notes. And they try to explain what they meant exactly, which is like, oh, only if you know, after it's opt-in, you can opt out of it. And only if, you know, you need help, then a human would look at your notes. And then it's like people keep pushing and then they say, oh, no, we're very sorry. We're very sorry. We did this all wrong.
We're very sorry we tried to get away with that, but obviously we cannot. So let's backtrack and apologize profusely and give you a way to get out of it. it and dang it back to the drawing board.
Yeah.
So we didn't get away with it after all.
I do not think that they, like, anyone was trying to, like, that Evernote's new, you know, money, their new way of monetizing Evernote was going to be, let's figure out people's personal business secrets or blackmail them or anything like that. But it was just the fact that they just seem to be very tone deaf about what people use the product for and how they might really feel, like, just the very idea that someone would be looking at the notes and people wouldn't be bothered by that. That's shocking that they didn't know that.
Yeah, well, and just assuming, you know, when you read through that privacy policy, it's almost like they assumed that users were going to be okay with it. And I don't know. There are certain services. I mean, I'm guessing that this probably happens in a lot of services that we use, and it just either doesn't make the news, or maybe they word their privacy policy in such a way that it's not as obvious or whatever. So maybe it happens far and wide amongst all the services that we use. But, you know, in particular, Docs apps or apps where you're writing a lot of notes and, you know, all sorts of things, like there's so much intention, probability that a lot of the stuff that you're putting in there is pretty darn personal stuff. And, you know, I mean, people aren't necessarily going to be that excited about opening up their diary to employees of the company, you know, because you don't really know where that ends. Now, Evernote did say, you know, it was going to be anonymized and censored and everything. It was just to get kind of the important information, but not associated directly with the person who posted it. But that would help us, you know, to train these machine learning systems with the kind of information that they will be running on in the future. But I think it's cold comfort.
Yeah. And if you're talking, and they also said that, you know, these would be only highly trained employees.
Yeah,
that would
right.
Look at them.
Security
and,
training.
Know,
yep.
Right. And so we know, you know, what happened just this earlier this week with Uber. You know, Uber employees had access to be able to use that location information to stalk ex-wives and ex-husbands. And so are we going to just trust generally people? I don't know. But I just think that they misunderstood, because I almost think, like, I'd be okay. Like, I have an idea that Google uses my email to give me ads and does keyword searches and things like that. And I almost don't mind. Like, I feel like my notes are much more personal than email. Like, I assume when I send an email that someone could forward it at any point. It could get in the hands of anyone. But I never assume that with any of my notes. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of people... this might be too late for Evernote. Like, they're backing up, because a lot of people are just like, I don't want to use this anymore. A lot of people pay for the premium version of Evernote and just were looking for other ways. And even, you know, the people ask me on Twitter, like, what else do you recommend? And I was like, I use Google Keep. And, you know, it's like, Google's not famous for its privacy policies, but they would never say, like, some humans are going to be looking at your notes that you're keeping in Keep. Like, that's something I feel that they would never do.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
In his last press conference of the year, President Obama said foreign hacking of our election system should be a nonpartisan issue. This comes after news that the U.S. Election Assistance Commission was itself hacked. Now, this hacking doesn't mean that the election was rigged, but it does point to another cybersecurity weakness of the election process. Obama used a large part of the press conference today to explore the subject of cybersecurity, repeatedly noting that we are in a digitalized culture and that some kind of hacking is going on every single day and could affect the integrity of our institutions. He also said his cybersecurity commission has outlined a range of strategies to do a better job at cybersecurity. But when you're talking about private institutions like the DNC that was hacked, that government can't create mandates for that. They can only provide suggestions to private places and to big companies. But it's just the insidiousness of a cyber attack is something that all of us should continue to think about, because it's not, you know, if you were going to bomb someone or in some other way attack them, you know immediately that you've been attacked. But the shocking thing about getting hacked is you don't know, you know, you don't know. And people are finding out, you know, it's, you know, they're inside your networks, finding all these things. And it's just amazing that this is happening and we have to pay better attention to it.
Yeah, well, and maybe silver lining is now, like, the I don't know, it's become such a big point of contention, such a big issue, and obviously, you know, in politicized to an insane degree, that maybe this is kind of a turning point of some sort where people realize how important this is and maybe, you know, redesign things so that it's maybe security first, because I think we feel like we talk about a lot of things on this show, you know, different, you know, why covering a lot of different ground like IoT and, you know, other things that weren't necessarily created with security in mind because, well, that's inconvenient or expensive to do up front. It's very reactionary. Maybe this kind of stuff happens and that's what leads to being more proactive about it. At least we can hope so.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I know that the government is, it's difficult. I mean, they're doing everything to get at our networks. And I know, you know, when I visited my friends that work in D.C. at the executive office, you know, no one even brings their cell phones into offices. Like, they get put in a box before you go in the room. Like, they're doing everything they can, but it is hard. And that's what, I mean, there's a lot of nations that are just trying to to get at our information, to control our elections, to really use cyber as a weapon. And
The cyber
yeah. as a weapon.
Yeah. And the information that is, you know, stored all over the place. Yeah, it's really kind of nuts to kind of see how this is happening. I can only hope that just means that means more openness to being more secure. And I worry that in other parts of like the government and trends that are happening both in the EU and in the US, that anyone who wants to protect them because of this sort of stuff, I mean, some of those tools feel like they're kind of going away a little bit and in a way to where, you know, some people want to control those tools and not allow people to protect themselves. I feel like that's kind of going in the opposite direction. I hope that doesn't continue. You thought Vine was going away. Well, psych, it turns out part of Vine will survive after all, as Twitter now plans to keep it around in the form of a low-profile app called Vine Camera. The app doesn't include any of the social aspects of the service, but simply allows users to record 6-second videos to share out to other services. Twitter also announced it's releasing a method to bring Vine followers over to creators' Twitter accounts so you don't lose any of that kind of following in the process, and that all existing Vines will now live on in perpetuity over at vine.co. So if you don't have enough self-control to only record 6-second videos with your normal camera, here's a camera that will only record 6-second videos.
Yeah, it's sort of like Instagram's Boomerang, or, I mean, there's no shortage of apps, camera apps that will do this or something like this. I guess I just still feel like I'm mourning Vine a little bit. Like, and I wasn't even like a crazy Vine user, but just it was an art form. Like, just
before that,
we didn't know it would be so funny to have a looping 6-second video with audio. And there were just so many people that used it in these hilarious ways. And what I think about is that, you know, there's not that much more room for independent apps and independent social media networks. And I feel like, you know, how are we going to get the next like weird Vine thing if we just say it's Twitter, it's Facebook, it's Snapchat, you know, that's it. There's no more room. Like, people might stop deciding like, I'm going to create this crazy app. And that makes the world a little bit less weird. And that's sad.
I mean, if there's an app to create 6-second videos and it has the word Vine in it, which it does, and it's owned by Twitter, which Vine was owned by Twitter, and it still shares out to Twitter, it's kind of the same thing, right? Like, it's
right, but I mean, that's not my point. My point is that there's got to be some other like weird thing that we can do with it. I mean, maybe it's Snapchat filters or, but I mean, Snapchat filters, it's sort of like you're only doing that on your own. Like, no one else wants to see all your crazy videos with your...
That's true. You're not going to find Snapchat filter compilations on YouTube. Or will you? Actually, you probably can.
I believe that people are entertained by my Snapchat filter things. I post those out, but I'm not an auteur. I wouldn't call myself an auteur yet. So that's what I'm saying. Like, I just want the next weird thing. I want to keep the internet weird, people.
That was kind of the beauty. I understand what you're saying. The beauty of Vine is that it really created this like branch of film to a certain degree of short form comedy in many regards. You never thought that 6 seconds was enough time to make anything funny, but people figured it out and made it funny. What is the next trend? What is the next step?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The Center for Digital Democracy says the data from your Fitbit or your Apple Watch poses a serious privacy risk. Lack of regulation makes the wearable data industry ripe for abuse and deceitful data mining practices. A new report suggests enforceable standards, formal processes, and stricter regulations for data collection and sharing on wearables. The research also explores respect for context. Now, that's an idea that's in the Consumer's Bill of Rights. It states that consumers have the right to expect that companies will collect, use, and disclose personal data in ways that are consistent with the context in which consumers provide the data. So that means that, you know, I'm providing this data on my Apple Watch for my own use, and I understand that it's somewhere, maybe it's on the phone, but that I expect that it's not going to be sold and used by an insurance company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this just kind of goes to something that I've been thinking about a lot lately, which is that if that data exists, someone wants it. You know, advertisers want it. In this case, Big Pharma wants it. Government wants it if it's out there. I just wonder how much of this kind of data is really, how valuable is it to the user? We have these devices, wearables, and potentially over time, they're going to start being able to evaluate and create data around a whole lot more than they do right now. Right now it's like heart rate and a few other things maybe. But I'm sure as we go down further that rabbit hole, you know, there's going to be a lot more data points constructed. Maybe that's beneficial to a user if that's paired up with, you know, like taking that into your doctor to get diagnosed for something or whatever. But I have a feeling a lot of people do this because it's fun to do it or because it seems like it's going to improve your life in some way to know all of this, you know, information about everything that you do in fitness and whatever. And I don't know if the cool factor of that, having that information, is a good trade-off for the other side.
Yeah, and I don't think we meaning me, think about that very often. You know?
Yeah, like I think because it's able to do it, so right. Why wouldn't I do it?
Right, yeah, you know? Why wouldn't, I mean, I track my fitness so that I can, you know, prove that I burn more calories than Leo. You know, is that worth it for this information to at some point be sent to an insurance company saying, you know, hey, you know, you have not exercised as much as you did 10 years ago and we gave you this insurance policy, like, we're going to charge you a lot more. No, it's not worth it. Am I going to stop? No.
Until it breaks.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. I don't like to think about this stuff, but we probably need to.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely worth considering because you never know where that, you know, where that rainbow lands, where that trail leads to.
But I also think that consumer protection should be better. I mean, we should be protected. We should, especially for health monitoring.
For sure.
Like I think these are the same people that wrote this report that got COPPA, the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act. They got that passed too. So I think that just because there's this dystopian future of them, this idea, that doesn't mean it has to be that way.
That's
and
true.
We can get protections in place so that I know that this, you know, the how many circles I fill is never going to be sold to an insurance company.
Yeah, yeah, that's a really good point. Hey, Pokemon, time for you to go over there because Super Mario is running away with your day one sales record. Okay. Did you like that?
I loved it.
It sounded way better in my head. Apptopia released app data that shows 2.85 million downloads in the first day of release compared to Pokemon Go's paltry, by comparison, 900,000 downloads in day one. App Annie estimates closer to 3.5 million downloads for the plumber, though it may be unfair to compare, and it actually kind of is, as Pokemon Go saw a limited initial release. They kind of released it slowly in different areas to make sure that it was working well before they opened it up wide, while Super Mario Run hit 150 countries at one time. But nonetheless, record's a record. These are some amazing numbers coming out of the gate. Super Mario Run is doing pretty darn well. I installed it last night because I do have an iPad at home, though I rarely ever use it. Mm-hmm. But I have it for things like this so that I can actually play.
Yeah.
This.
But you didn't become my Mario friend.
Oh, well, because I haven't had my iPad on it all day.
I've been playing today. All day. I asked a lot of people to be friends. I connected it with several accounts. I have 0 points still.
Have you finished a level?
I don't.
Or is it just the social
so.
Thing?
I have no idea. It's like I never played. Yeah, it's just I never played any Nintendo games when I was growing up. It's not part of my nostalgia. So
yeah.
And I haven't even gotten to the point of paying for it. You know, like I just I installed the free version. That might be enough for me. Install the free version. Treat it as a social network. Make everyone be friends with me and never play.
Everyone will think that you play because you're on there.
Yeah.
And you can chat with them or do whatever. I don't even know what you can do with the social aspect. That's like the least interesting thing to me about this. From what I could tell, the app, no matter what, the game, no matter what, is free to download. So you get one download, you get it. Once you play through three levels, then it's like, all right, the rest of the world's going to open up to you for $10. And some people are there. I guess there's a lot of one-star reviews because people don't want to pay $10. But it's, you know, it's a pretty good game. You paid a lot more for that, especially when you count in inflation for the original Mario games. So, you know, don't worry about it. It's fun.
Just
pay $10, whatever.
I like the way that they've done it because I often do pay money for games that I only play like a couple of levels and then I'm not going to play anymore. So this is nice. I get to really decide before I buy, if you will. I'm going to turn my sound off. Also, otherwise these, we figured out, someone in the chat room told us what the mushroom guys, Koopa,
they're, Koopa is one of them.
Koopa.
But I don't know if that's the Toad. Mushroom guy. Toad. Yeah, there you go.
Toad. So, yeah.
It's Toad, bro.
Yeah, so we're Princess Peach and Toad.
There we go.
Yeah.
You go, Toad.
But yeah, it makes me feel a bit old because this wasn't part of my childhood. I'm not a real, you know, I was born in 1973, so, but I'll still play it.
Yeah, it's fun. I had a good time last night. I just need to buy the rest of the levels and I guarantee I'll play through the entire game. And then it'll come out on Android and... I wish it came out on Android sooner. Maybe it won't, actually. Maybe they will keep it from Android. It's very entirely possible. Because they have this whole DRM thing. Maybe they're so, you know, so worked up about that they decide not to release it on Android. I don't know.
Right. That's the other thing that you have to be connected to an internet. You have to be on the internet to play it, which they say is for piracy. Well, but they say it's for security. And then they, you know, you mean piracy. And yeah, so, I mean... We'll see. We'll see how long it lasts. How long will it? You say you will for sure play through all the levels. How long will that take you?
Well, I don't know. That's a really great question. With games like this, it doesn't seem like it takes very long. But you can spend a lot of time perfecting it, right? And going back and making sure that you find all the things. Especially Nintendo is really good with their marquee kind of franchises at hiding things in there. So that replay value is really good. I mean, I feel like there's a lot of kind of these standard Nintendo magic in the gameplay. Like it's really fun. The sounds are very reminiscent of a lot of the old games, the music, you know, all that kind of stuff. So if you were a fan of kind of the older school NES games, you're probably going to really enjoy this.
Now, did you add your Miitimo?
No.
You didn't? Are you going to?
I didn't know that you could do that, and I don't even know that I will. I really hardly spent very much time at all in Miitomo.
Miitomo, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Anthony had his Miitomo on his, it was his Miitomo face, and I wanted that. He's like, you have to have a Miitomo, so I'm going to make a Miitomo.
Yeah, now you're going down the rabbit hole. Now you got to get Miitomo and spend some time there.
Right.
And buy some outfits.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Right. After the break, if you want to build your own robot overlord, you can buy all the parts at the Wachongay Market in Shenzhen, China. You can find out more. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, the sponsor of this episode. Getting a mortgage, it's frustrating, it's time consuming, nobody likes it, but Rocket Mortgage brings that process into the 21st century. It's fast, it's powerful, it's completely online. Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time consuming parts of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. If you hate searching through stacks of old paperwork, you are in luck. With Rocket Mortgage, you can easily share your bank statements and pay stubs at the touch of a button. That helps you get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored to your unique financial situation. Even better, with Rocket Mortgage, you can do all of this on your phone or your tablet. It's a quick online process that you can manage from the convenience of your couch. So if you're looking to refinance your mortgage or buy a new home, check out Rocket Mortgage today. It's at quickenloans.com/TNT. Make sure that you add the TNT. We want them to know that we sent you there. That's quickenloans.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. Recently, Ben Popper from The Verge investigated the Wachongbei Market in Shenzhen, China, a place where one resident says gadgets are their natural resource. Ben Popper joins us to talk about his experience. Welcome back to the show, Ben.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So you say that this market is sort of a brain for the electronic supply chain that stretches across China. Describe a little bit about what you can find at the market.
So you go in and on the first floor, you can find, you know, high-end phones from Chinese brands like Huawei. And you can also find the latest knockoff iPhones. I got a very convincing fake iPhone 7 there a week before it came out. And then as you get deeper into the market, you can find component suppliers for anything. So, you know, if you're looking for gyroscopes or camera lenses or processors, you know, you could go in there and say, I need 10,000 tablets for this market in Southeast Asia or Africa. These are my specs. Who can give me the best price and get me 10,000 units in a month? And, you know, you'll work with all of the vendors there, and they're connected to the factories and the suppliers all across China. And so you could sort of work out a deal there. And a month later, you've got 10,000 new tablets ready to sell.
So could I just walk in there and, like, say I wanted to build a giant robot or something? Could I just walk in there and do that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about a giant robot. You could certainly build a drone. You could certainly build a toy robot. And you could certainly build, like, a custom Twit tablet with, like, a custom logo and a custom case. And, you know, the whole soup to nuts of making, you know, electronics, it can be done there.
And so did they give you a hard time, like, when you went in and were filming? I've heard that they sometimes don't like cameras in there. Did you have any issues with that?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. We were told that and we were expecting that. But I think it's changed a lot because it's not as much about counterfeit goods and copycat goods anymore. It's more about stuff that they're creating there. So a lot of original products, or about, you know, the very upfront business of saying, like, I can make you something, you know, how would you like it made? So I think they're a little bit more comfortable with cameras now. You know, Wired did a documentary, we did a story, and, you know, I think kind of reframed a little bit of the conception of what the market is about, which is to say it's as much about innovation as it is about, you know, copyright infringement.
Now, what about legitimacy? On another show I do on the network, All About Android, we've had a handful of guests on the show that have been to markets like this, and they come back with the craziest, coolest, like, Android gadgets, right? Phones, things that are shaped like bunnies but actually have a SIM card slot, you know, just the weird random stuff, but always with the kind of, like, the cautionary, you know, saying or phrase that, like, you know, be careful what you plug into this because you never know what's going to happen. Is all this legitimate, or, like, what is the level of legitimacy with a lot of the markets
right.
that you find here?
It's interesting. I mean, we were told that, you know, people there could do a really great phone repair if you had a cracked screen or something like that. You know, it could be done super cheaply, but that also, you know, if you weren't careful while you were repairing, yeah, all of your, you know, memory would be swapped out for old stale stuff. And, like, you know, if you don't know who you're talking to and you can't establish trust through maybe a third party, I'm sure you could get ripped off at the market. That was the implication that I got. But, you know, when you're talking about sourcing something, you know, it's a much sort of, like, bigger process than just, you know, one device. And there are a lot of people now who have sort of set themselves up to be the liaison between people who are coming in from the West and, you know, the people who are here. So a lot of Kickstarter folks who dream up a project, like you said, you know, that's powered off Android, but don't have any expertise in manufacturing, this would be the kind of place where they would go and hash it out with people who do have that expertise.
Mm. Now, Shenzhen itself is an amazing place. I mean, that's where the market is. It started as a fishing village, and now it's just huge. And now they say they produce more millionaires than anywhere in the world. I mean, what do you think all of that now innovation is? What's behind that? Is it, like, that the fact that they share IP in a different way than we do? What do you think is behind their growth?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think part of it was that Shenzhen was a special economic zone. So it was the first place in China, one of the first places in China that was encouraged to take outside investment. And they learned a lot from the Taiwanese about chip making and then from American companies. So they kind of started out, you know, as the cheap manufacturer. And as they learned the business, then they broke off and started doing their own stuff. So, you know, the ZTE and the HTC and the, you know, Huawei's of the world, the DJI's, they were all kind of born there because the supply chain was there. And as people learned the supply chain, some of them broke off and started doing their own creations. You know, I think obviously China is just so massive. You know, they have a market there for internet consumers that's, you know, 3 or 4 times the size of what's in the US. And so, you know, you can create new businesses on just a fantastic scale. In terms of, you know, sharing IP, I do think that, you know, some of what we learned in the market was that it's much less about, right, for example, patents and copyright. Like that's, it just, it has no, it has very little legitimacy there. And so that means you have to move faster. You know, if you're going to create something, somebody else is going to copycat it. So you always have to be moving on to the next thing. So I think that that does help to push the pace of innovation, the fact that they don't expect there to be any respect for intellectual property rights and that they would rather collaborate than try to, you know, litigate.
And sometimes that's amazing and creates something wonderful and innovative. And sometimes it's like hoverboards where they move so fast with no anything. And then we had a lot of fires on our hands.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think that there's both. I think that there's people like, you know, DJI, who's a market leader, and there's people like Huawei and Oppo who are now, you know, creating phones that are of the caliber of, you know, an iPhone. And then there's just this humongous group underneath that who knock off that stuff and do it cheaply and do it dangerously. That is the nature of the beast there very much.
Yeah, you mentioned in your piece and in the video that, you know, the hoverboard as an example that you just brought up was there years before it kind of made it to the Western, you know, Western side of the world, let's say. While you were there, did you, I mean, I don't know, what's the next hoverboard? Were there any technologies or anything that you saw that you were like, yeah, this, you know, we're not seeing this, but this right. could be a trend.
I was looking for the next hot thing. I don't think I found anything where I thought, oh man, this is it. You know, there was like the Bluetooth car cigarette lighter that's also an earpiece and also a smartwatch if you want it to be. You know, there was like the like crazy soccer ball that becomes a, you know, like solar powered lamp. You know, there was stuff that was wacky, but then again, if you showed me a hoverboard and been like, this is going to be the big thing, I would have been like, yeah, whatever. Okay. You know, it's like, it didn't seem that cool to me when I first saw it either. So it's hard to predict those kinds of trends, you know, sure. Selfie sticks, hoverboards, like drones are just like, you know, they could just be a cheap toy or they could be like the next big thing.
Yeah. Very true.
Well, Ben, thank you so much for joining us. Ben Popper is a reporter at The Verge. And thank you for coming on. You can read all of his work and watch the excellent video that he did from Shenzhen. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, Ben.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right. Have a good night. Jim writes to TNT at twit.tv, says, I have been doing some rough estimates to see what price we need to hit per mile before we can expect autonomous ride sharing to replace ownership. I think the tipping point will be when we hit 25 cents per mile for a self-driving taxi. At that point, autonomous taxi owners can still make money and people can replace owning with autonomous ride sharing. Currently, the human driver adds about 10 times the cost compared to future self-driving services. I don't expect the market to mature for decades, but the fewer people own cars, the more expensive the cars will become, making it economically challenging to produce cars at affordable prices and out of reach for many consumers. Thanks for doing the back of napkin math on that one. Coming up, nothing weird about a hologram digital assistant in a jar. At least I don't think so. We'll talk a little bit about that. But first, let's take a minute to thank Grasshopper. They are the sponsor of this episode. Grasshopper is a virtual phone system designed for entrepreneurs. Grasshopper works just like a traditional phone system, but requires no hardware purchase or software installation because you already have the hardware, probably, if you've got a smartphone. With their iOS and Android app, callers can reach you wherever you are on your mobile phone. That's really all there is to it. Grasshopper allows you to keep your existing number so you can maintain your brand. When you make a call, your client will see your Grasshopper caller ID instead of your personal phone number so you can keep it all within your brand. Simply select a toll-free or local number. Then you record a custom greeting and add multiple extensions for your business. Toll-free numbers are great for marketing, obviously, and make your business sound more professional. So that's what this is all about. This is what you can do here. Set up department and employee extensions with custom call forwarding to any phone in the world, and things get just a little bit more businessy, a little bit more complex from the outside. Get voicemails emailed to you as audio attachments. You can also send and receive SMS text messages from your business number. Join the over 250,000 Grasshopper customers today. Plans start at just $12 per month. You have a 30-day money-back guarantee. Turn your smartphone into a business line with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, go to trygrasshopper.com/twit. That's trygrasshopper.com/twit. And we thank Grasshopper for their support.
TNT's fan of the day is AcidSugar1414 on Twitter, who says he watches TNT while collecting all the coins in Super Mario Run, the best mobile Mario game.
So that's good. What are the other ones? Well, I guess they would be the probably Nintendo's portable, but I don't know if that's the same as mobile. Anyways.
Well, actually,
I mean, are there other mobile Mario games?
I have no idea.
I don't know that there are.
I have no idea. It's the maybe he just is saying it's going to be the best.
It very well could
be. Future.
Yeah.
And I think that's good multitasking.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we appreciate it.
Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. And use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT. And we are going to find it.
Digital assistants can be helpful, but can they be a life companion? The Gatebox is a holographic companion in a jar, equipped with motion and temperature sensors and the ability to control home automation, among other things. And in Japan, where marriage and birth rates are declining, having a companion in a jar might actually make some sense. The promotional video actually shows how a man converses with Gatebox as if it's a real person. When he leaves the house, Gatebox says she can't wait to see him later. Throughout his day, Gatebox sends him text messages wondering when he'll be home tonight, and you know, it's very conversational. When he says he's on his way, Gatebox turns on the lights at home so that when he arrives outside, it's as if his companion is home waiting for him to walk through the door, which she is. They watch movies together. They say goodnight to each other. It's basically a digital girlfriend in a jar. What do you think about this, Megan?
I mean, who among us has not wanted a partner that lived inside of a jar and all it did was text us to say, coming home soon?
Come home early. Come home early. It actually asked him to come home early. Yeah. She's lonely.
If you take away like the creepy love affair part of this and just the idea that, yes, you know, birth rates are declining and et cetera, I think it'd be cool to have a little hologram inside my Amazon Echo or my Siri that I could just talk to and hang out with. I mean, the weird romantic overtones, I don't necessarily think I need.
Can't wait to see you. I'll be waiting. I get it. And honestly, I think at some point, maybe this becomes a little bit more normal than it is right now. Like, it doesn't feel very normal to me. But I mean, you know, movies like Her, I've not seen Her, but I have to imagine there's much overlap.
Yes.
Between what I know about Her, mm-hmm. and what I was watching with this promotional thing.
And of course, the West World. We can't forget the West World.
I know. Someday I'll be able to quote it back to you.
Yeah. But. So, I mean, I'm not giving any spoilers to say just relationships with artificial intelligence never turn out well for humans. Never.
I don't know. But I mean, this artificial human is relegated to a jar and is just a hologram. So that kind of limits the not turning out well that could happen.
Well, yeah. I mean, again, I don't want to give any spoilers for Her either, but Her was just a voice. It's the psychological damage that this wrought.
Yeah, there you go. That's true. I hadn't even considered that. when she decides to cut off all the power and you can't see or eat food in your fridge because it's all spoiled anymore, that's physical damage right there.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can't buy it. You can't buy one that speaks English. But
right.
If you speak Japanese, you can buy it for, I think there's a small window in which you can purchase it, and it doesn't come out until next year.
Maybe so. This is the thing, that this is the trend that has yet to come over here. We're at the point right now where we're like, oh, that's so funny, that's so Japanese, blah, blah, blah. 5 years from now, we're all going to have one of these little holograms in our house.
Maybe.
Maybe.
So you're saying this hologram was put together in China and then sent to Japan before it got here?
I just mean outside, like innovation from elsewhere that like we don't identify with in a Western culture sense.
Well, if I make it to that market in China, I'm going to try to make myself a hologram digital assistant.
Cool. Well, you probably could. You know that there's enough people there offering parts. Mm-hmm. I guess you just got to figure out how all those parts go together. Mm-hmm. That's outside of my comfort zone. somebody else can do that, and then I'll buy one and we'll review it on this show. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW, and you can find us on Twitter. We're at Tech News Today TV.
And you can find all the ways to subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to share our show with your family and friends that you're seeing over the holidays, just steal their phone and subscribe for them. They want it. They just might not know yet. And if you want to tweet at me, I'm at Megan Maroney.
What better way to say happy holidays than to download an episode and put it on their phone? Seriously.
Exactly.
I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to our technical director, Kara. Thanks to Patrick for helping out here in the studio. Thanks to Kevin for editing, making us look good. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see you all on Monday. Have a great weekend. Bye, everyone.